Dimitri Siri.
Cyrus.
I beg your pardon. Dimitri Cyrus in studio and from a company called Boetry. And welcome. It is so lovely to have you in studio, Dimitri.
Thank you for having me, Lou.
Absolute pleasure. I met Dimitri offhand a couple of weeks ago and I had coffee with you down at Hoedspruit Cafe and I was fascinated with what you're doing. And because we want to go on that conservation journey with the radio station and incorporate as many businesses and companies local that have got that same pathway, that's why I insisted that you come in for an interview. But Dimitri, as it has to start like everyone else and as curious beings as we are, we just need a little insight as to where did you come from, where were you born, where did you grow up, studies, and how did you land up in Hoedspruit?
Thank you, Lou, and once again, cheers for having me on the show. A little bit about myself. My fiance and I, we actually recently moved to Hoedspruit only on the 2nd of January, 2025. But the backstory goes, I was born and raised in Durban, KwaZulu-Natal, and growing up in that beautiful ecosystem of beach, mountains, and bush, my family, we had a lodge that was near the Pinda, Mkuzi, Shishlui area. And so from a very young age, grew up with a strong tie and connection to our natural world and all of the beauty within it, and also the communities who coexisted alongside these protected areas. And yeah, I spent 12 years at the very same school at Clifton. And then after that, actually had no clue what I wanted to do after school. And so I did my time as international marketing management. And then again, after university, I actually had no clue what I wanted to do after university.
That's okay.
And I think it's, yeah, we get a lot of pressure sometimes as to what we should do. This is the route we should go down. This is the path we should select. But I ended up throwing myself in a bit of a deep end. Both parents are Greek, which makes me 100% Greek, but obviously South African. And so I went and did my service in the army in Greece. And that was an interesting time. It was like an all-boys school times 100, especially not being able to speak the language of Greek.
Wow. How long was that service?
It was just 3 months.
3 months, okay.
So it was a short stint, but it felt like a year.
Oh, I can imagine.
There was a lot of, it sounds a lot cooler than it was. I spent my time in Sparta, not like the movie 300. Yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't come out the same way as what those chaps looked like in the movie. But it was, yeah, it was an interesting time.
Yes, there was obviously an experience to what you, that 3 months. Would you do it again?
In reflection, yes. During the time, it was something that I was like, why am I here? What am I doing? But once you're in it, you have to live through it. And so it was it made me more of a man, I guess we could say that. Yeah.
Like the good old army days used to do here in South Africa. So from there onwards.
So, Lou, yeah, after my time in the army, I then moved over to the UK and I spent a good 8 years in London. And I was working in advertising, but predominantly on the data technology side of the advertising industry. So for all the listeners, when you're in an app or on a website and you see all those adverts that pop up, there's actually very sophisticated technology behind that. Because when you're on your app or looking at a sports news website or like, I don't know, Sky News, whatever it might be, these systems know who you are, not necessarily that you are Lou, but they know that you are this type of person, that you browse these websites. And anyway, the data and the system behind that, it was quite scary. I don't know if anyone came across Cambridge Analytica and The Social Dilemma. That's a documentary on Netflix, but it just shows the power behind these big data systems and pretty much how data was being utilized to manipulate people to buy things online that we don't really need. And so, yeah, spent a good time in that world. But it wasn't where my heart and my passion was. And like growing up as a little boy in KwaZulu-Natal, it was very much more in the bush, understanding nature and the connection to nature and how people coexist with nature. So that took me then on a different journey.
And is that journey where you are sort of now?
Yes.
You're from the UK and you came to South Africa. Is that correct? Where did you go from there?
Yeah, so after the UK, I followed a calling deep down. I knew I wanted to leave that career. And I was curious to understand what's happening in the conservation space on this continent. And so I actually planned a trip for several months through southern and eastern Africa. And what I did was I just went and spent 6 weeks teaching at a school outside of Arusha in Kilimanjaro, And there it was very much informal, rural, volunteering. And during that time, I just learned a lot about some of the complexities of rural East Africa and also some of the challenges that a lot of these communities who coexist alongside protected areas, what they were facing. And, you know, classic, I guess, school in Africa and classic volunteering is that it felt very weird going to volunteer at a school that promoted this as an opportunity for Western society to come and experience Africa. But it felt very disconnected because I went and built a connection with these kids. And then after 6 weeks, I then suddenly abandoned them. I know that's not the right terminology, but if you think about all the volunteer programs where people come and then they go, what are we actually leaving behind rather than fulfilling our own need to kind of give back? And so that was one insight that was kind of took me away in terms of, oh my gosh, there must be another way to contribute that isn't necessarily leaving kids to feel alone once we build this relationship and then depart from it. And then after that, I then spent some time in Botswana. This is still in 2019, and I went and joined a group called Elephants for Africa. And we're living on the border of Makadikadi, Saltpans, beautiful area and region.
Can you imagine?
And just absolute vast wilderness. And there, you know, I thought I was going to collar elephants, research elephants, understand their behavior. And not once did we do that. During 2019, it was one of the longest droughts that they had. And given the high numbers of elephants in Botswana, there's obviously a lot of human-wildlife conflict, and a lot of the communities in that region were agriculturalists, and it was scary to see how many times elephants were raiding their crops. Yes. And so all of our time as a research group was spent trying to educate and help communities mitigate elephants raiding their crops. And I was just blown away by a very simple solution, which was chilies. And growing chilies, we're effectively running workshops with small-scale farmers and subsistence farmers to say, if you start growing chilies, what you can do with these chilies is obviously harvest them, but then grind them up, mix them with elephant dung, and light them on fire in the evening when there are elephants in the area. And given that an elephant's trunk has around 40,000 muscles in it, very sensitive, and lo and behold, the smoke and the chili would sting their nostrils and they would flee.
Fantastic. I love that story.
Yeah.
And tell me, is that driving towards what inspired you to actually start Boetry, your business?
Yes,
100%. So it was seeing that what more you can do to sustain that environment, not wanting to leave the children, but to educate them, but to give back and to take back. Is that sort of going towards the inspiration for you to go on in this direction?
100%, Lou. Yeah. And the baobab tree, that's essentially our tree of life that we're creating. And so the essence of it was really understanding that there's a lot of money and capital being deployed or used in the world of conservation, biodiversity, social impact, but there was something missing. And that thing that was missing was trust. It was building trust in the data for reporting. It was building trust in the relationships between organizations and the communities that they are saying that they serve, and there was a lack of trust in what that money was actually doing in terms of a difference and measuring this very ambiguous word impact.
Yeah.
And it's translating that word impact into something tangible and measurable. And that's really what we've been building now for the last 5 years with Boetry.
And Boetry, it's not just a tech platform, it's a movement. And can you explain the mission and the vision behind what you do?
Yes. So, Lou, our ultimate end goal is that we dream of a world where we can unite sustainability and technology to really drive global actions. And so from a vision point of view, it's no longer talking in boardrooms. It's no longer discussing what should we do, how can we best collaborate. It's about giving people the tools to actually go and start collecting the information needed to make the more informed, better decisions so that we can trust that the actions we're taking are actually informed based on the outcomes of progress that we are geared towards trying to track. And from a mission point of view, given that we've been built in Kenya, in Africa, for Africa and for the world, is really to build inclusive technology to establish trust within sustainability. And so what I mean by that, inclusive technology means we're working in a world that is tech illiterate. We're working in a continent that can't go with the fancy bells and whistles of all the fancy features and fancy software. We have to build technology that is simple, that is mobile first, meaning having a mobile application so that teams and staff members and community members can all participate in the projects that are meant for them.
And so that they can actually physically see the value in what they are what you are giving them or taking from them, because like you say, the technology is not there. They don't understand it, but so you sort of going onto their level as to letting them know what this is all about, communicating with them on a one-on-one level, that trust, that value. And you obviously, that's the core values that you've got to impart with those communities at the end of the day. And also you want to walk away with accurate information.
Yeah.
And they've got to be giving you accurate information at the end of the day. So, I mean, those are all falls all into your core values, your purpose, and the broader impact of what you are trying to do. I just want to jump to the next question here. We often hear about sustainability. But tracking impact is a challenge. And what gap in the industry do you see? And how does Boetry solve it?
So, firstly, just to talk about sustainability, it's a very overused word. It's a word that often is thrown around as part of lip service. And there's something called greenwashing when an organization essentially runs a project and then makes a claim about the impact or sustainability work that they've done, but then have no evidence or data to back up what actually happened. And the tracking challenge around impact and reporting against it falls into the same trap. And so often the CMO, the chief marketing officer, and this is mainly on, let's say, a for-profit corporate world where people are given the hat of tell our story of good, of doing well and doing good. And again, now there's a lot more scrutiny because consumers and customers are pushing back and fighting back to say, how are you actually helping, just an example, 50,000 women through social economic development? Yeah. Or how are you tracking 1,000 beehives that have been implemented in a particular region? And so no more is it good enough just to tell a story. It's now coming to verifying or creating an audit trail through data to actually prove that work is actually happening. And so that's really how we go about solving it. Lou, our clients range from tourism organizations to conservation groups to social impact organizations and to corporates. And some organizations are at level two, meaning they're just getting started with their sustainability tracking and their impact storytelling, or they're at level nine, meaning they're well advanced in their carbon emissions, tracking their water, their waste, their energy, as well as all of their conservation and community initiatives. And what's beautiful about the tech that we've built is, I've mentioned, it's inclusive, it's simple, and it gives the outcomes of measurable impacts that we help our partners actually track. And so whether an organization is just getting started or advanced, we meet that organization where they are and then just simplify it, because sustainability is challenging. There's a lot of frameworks in terms of standards to measure against, whether it's the UN Sustainable Development Goals or B Corp certification or climate and green disclosures that are coming out for the EU. It does get overwhelming as to what are the boxes we need to check, where do we start, and it's a journey. And that's really the gap that we've seen in how we integrate ourselves. Just to start, let's start at ground zero. The view from the bottom of the mountain is just as beautiful as you get on top. And we'll walk the pathway together.
And going forward, Dimitri, data and sustainability don't always go hand in hand. How does Boetry make impact tracking simple, inclusive, and actionable?
Thank you, Lou. So to start with, how do we make it simple? We always start as Boetry with an organization. We want to understand what are your goals, what are your objectives as an organization. And then we start and help you design the questions, the questions you should be asking your team, what metrics you should be tracking, what are the variables in order to inform the outcomes that you're trying to track against. As an example, whether it's water, tracking usage, source of water, grey water matter versus other sources of water, as well as energy and then waste systems. So it's us helping you design those questions and the measurement around that. And then the inclusive part is a very simple dashboard where our project manager or our partners or clients' project manager would have a simple dashboard to set up the projects, organize your teams, organize your data in a very simple way that allows you to include your staff, your team, and the community members to collect the data through our mobile application. And the last piece of that, how is it actionable? So you can imagine after 3 months of collecting data, the question becomes, so what? Now we've got all this.
What happens to it? Yes.
Yeah, we've got all this data, but so what? And so again, my team are really specialists in distilling the insight to provide the output of what that data is actually telling you or telling us. And we give recommendations on how to scale programs, where can you reduce your carbon emissions, how do you scale this food security or regenerative agriculture program, what's working, what's not working. And so our team really give that hands-on experience to understand, this is what your data is telling us. We might need to tweak some of the questions or some of the projects and who's doing the work, who's not doing the work. And it's an always on iterative journey. And so it's really having that vulnerability to say, sometimes our data is going to tell us something we don't like. Mm-hmm. And we need to be vulnerable to say, okay, but that's room for improvement. Mm-hmm. And that means it gives us a way to understand what we can do to improve.
Going forward, absolutely. It hones it down. And then again, Dimitri, tourism and conservation go hand in hand, especially in a place like Hoedspruit, South Africa. How is BoaTree helping lodges, camps, tourism operators measure and prove their sustainability efforts?
So, Lou, surprisingly, the tourism sector, at the end of the day, are based in the most critical ecosystems and wilderness areas in Africa, around Hoedspruit, the Greater Kruger area. And it's been a little bit scary to go into some of these organizations and see that their tracking is just getting started. And I really believe that tourism organizations have a responsibility to actually step up and lead by example in terms of what can be done for a for-profit entity like a camp, like a lodge, to start tracking, not just to report to investors, but also to report to guests, travelers, as well as the team. And so what we've been doing is really helping, and this has been new in the last year, in terms of going straight into these tourism operators and tourism groups to say, guys, you've got a footprint. It might cover, you know, we've got African bush camps. Yeah. They're one of our clients that operate in Botswana, Zimbabwe, Zambia. They have a foundation and they have about 17 camps and lodges. And with that, we're helping them track their water, their waste and energy across those 17 properties. Each one has a sustainability champion who uses the BoaTree app to just record the data they need to. And then on the foundation side, they've got a lot of partners who implement healthcare, education, as well as WASH programs and conservation activities. And so we help them have a holistic, inclusive ecosystem in one system, in one dashboard, to just understand this is what's happening across all of our operations, and these are the areas where we can grow and improve. So it's really, each organization is unique, and every tourism organization is unique. Mm-hmm. But it's now not becoming a nice to have, it's becoming a must have. And that's in 2027, I think the EU is the parent of the law in terms of, let's just say the mother of the house when regulation comes into play, and the likes of Booking.com, TUI, Hotels.com, if tourism operators want to keep their bookings and their operations listed on these booking sites, there's climate disclosures, green disclosures, the CSRD. I'm not going to go into all the acronyms, but there's a lot of regulation that these tourism operators are going to have to comply with.
And rightfully so. Those criteria apply as basic as having liquor licenses or having
exactly.
Your health checks for your kitchen. So it's the criteria is, it's just obviously each establishment is different. But I think I would also want to support a lodge that I know makes an effort to sustain their community, that sustains the wildlife in the area. So I think absolutely it's like adding another star onto, if you a 2-star or a 3-star, that's the criteria that you're adding onto your business.
100%. And it's like any going to any restaurant or going to any hotel, you want to know that you're supporting an organization that's just walking the talk and yes. Talking the walk and following through on what they say.
100%. I couldn't agree with you more on that one. And Dimitri, beyond tourism, what other industries or sectors can benefit from BoaTree's platform?
So Lou, we have a strong foot within the world of foundations, meaning, you know, there's an organization in India that uses, they're called Valiapa Foundation. It's the African Bush Camps Foundation. It's all these organizations who have, let's say, a private pool of wealth or money from donors and philanthropists that then has the capitals deployed to support community initiatives. So we just help them as foundations understand when they spend a dollar, this is the return on impact that they may be getting. And then we have two colleagues in the Bayatree team, Jess and Lauren, who are both experts in disaster management and disaster risk reduction, meaning, yeah, like there's organizations like All Hands and Hearts and UNICEF, that particular Jess, and through our partnership with Disaster Nomad, it's an organization that really helps build more resilient communities in disaster risk areas. So if there's a flood, a drought, a fire, it's really building the resilience and the infrastructure around that to help the community that when disaster does happen, it's not relying purely on prevention, but there's already been proactive support. And so we have a beautiful range of customers in that sector as well. And so we've spoken about foundations, and then there is a pool of corporates in terms of, you know, the likes of Mondi and other organizations. I can't say others who are hopefully going to be coming on board soon, but helping them with their corporate social responsibility and corporate social investment. And again, just to mitigate greenwashing, help implement the projects that they're doing, whether it's food security or regenerative agri or whatever it might be. And we help them just get the tangible numbers to actually tell that story of impact.
And, you know, you want everyone around you to be aware of it, and going and getting the corporates involved is the right way to go. Because not only is the, obviously the finances come from there as well, but I think it also gives that that corporate a clean bill of health.
Yeah.
In terms of that every bit that they're also trying to give back as well. But community participation is often overlooked in sustainability efforts. How does Bayatree ensure that local voices and grassroots efforts are recognized in impact measurement?
Well, I'm going to go back to the origin of Bayatree, because it was quite fun. At the end of 2019, I met this wonderful gentleman, Tom Sylvester, and he's the CEO of Loyasaba Conservancy, which is in a beautiful region in Kenya. It's called Laikipia, Laikipia County. And the beginning of Bayatree was really around recognizing what I mentioned in Botswana. You know, conservation is actually not much to do about wildlife. It's all about the people who are living on the borders of wildlife. And that's why conservation exists. And we often have put up more electric fences, got more anti-poaching units, more guns and arms, which of course is needed in particular areas to help mitigate poaching for the obvious reasons we need to. But it's putting a plaster on the issue.
Yeah.
And instead of listening and going to the community to understand, or just asking the question, what do you need? And not just assuming that everyone can live a sustainable life beyond the fence. Yeah. You know, the reason there's, you know, bushmeat hunting and poaching and deforestation, people are just trying to survive and feed their family. Yeah. And we recognize this. And I recognize this particularly in Kenya, where, you know, 70% of Kenya's wildlife lives outside of protected areas. So it's very different to the Kruger and South Africa, where everything is privately fenced or national parks are fenced off. And so it was beautiful that coexistence still happens there in its natural historical way. And I worked with a group of Maasai on the border of Loyasaba Conservancy, and they were called the Khoija community. And it was there towards the end of the year, so October, November, December, it's their rainy season. And being pastoralists, these Maasai elders and leaders, you know, their wealth, their bank is their livestock.
Yeah.
And, you know, the traditional acacia thorn trees used as a fence, as a boma or a kraal, was only good as it could
have been a temporary solution.
Very temporary. They needed a more robust solution. So when we sat underneath the acacia tree, had a meeting, it was very much, we need predator-proof bomas, meaning triple wire fencing to protect them against the lions and the hyenas that were coming to kill their livestock. And especially when it was raining, I remember one incident we went to report, a hyena came and broke in because of their roofs being corrugated iron. The rain was obviously coming down and no one could hear the commotion, what was happening in the boma. And the next morning there were 27 goats that had been killed by one hyena. And that hyena obviously just broken, predator mode, the goats were trapped and
just had an absolute ball.
And you can imagine the retaliation or the feeling of that person coming out and seeing 27 of their goats dead,
their livelihood gone.
It's like, well, I'm going to take matters into my own hand. And this is a universal thing, but poisoning becomes a reality. I'm going to take a goat, put in some chemicals and poison, and leave that goat outside. Yeah. And obviously, that's a huge negative ecosystem killer. Because obviously the hyenas might come, the vultures will come, the jackals will come, everything else will come.
The impact, it's a cycle of life, the impact that it has, it doesn't just kill that hyena. Like you say, there's so many more that get that suffer in that process.
Totally, and particularly the birds of prey. I mean, these birds are so undervalued in terms of the ecosystem benefits and getting rid of the bacteria from the environment. And we're like, this can't be the solution. And so what we then went is like, the whole idea was, how can we include communities to report and complete positive planet actions? What I mean by that is, how can a community member be empowered to report a human wildlife conflict beyond someone just going there, capturing GPS location, and then disappearing with no compensation, with no benefit? So I'm going to get over as a community member reporting human wildlife conflicts because there's nothing in it for me. And so there was this idea of incentive. How do we incentivize people's participation in a way that would feel that they could contribute to conservation beyond the boundary, but get a direct benefit for doing that work? And so that's where the idea of Bay Tree originated was, you know, we worked with this Koidja community. We said, please, can you report human wildlife conflicts, the removal of invasive species, and also healthcare activities? If someone wanted to refer someone to the clinic, we had a community champion in the clinic that would just let us know if someone was referred through this program. And these are what we call tasks. Yeah. And so during that period, the community reported 600 tasks. And this is pre-BioTree and pre-AnyTech. I was in the field for 3 months just reporting and responding and going and collecting the data manually with the GPS, the old school way. And it was incredible. I mean, the 600 tasks, we could validate this work actually happened. And the reason the community did that was that we had $10,000 as Loisaba and BioTree. And in exchange for them reporting this data, we unlocked the $10,000 and that gave the community 15 homes. Each received their own predator-proof boma.
Oh, fantastic.
And so it became an exchange, data for development.
It's a barter deal and it works to both for both, absolutely. The benefits is both ways.
Yeah. So just taking an old school model of trading and just making it tangible between community and conservation efforts beyond the boundary and just making it more inclusive. And so that's really the, I guess, the silver thread that still runs through Bay Tree.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, Dimitri, you know. And just to go back again here, many organizations struggle with turning sustainability data into action. How does Bay Tree help businesses and foundations make meaningful decisions based on their data? Did we cover that one already? We didn't.
We did indirectly, but it's a nice segue to actually...
Yes.
I won't get too techie, but this is really where the beauty and the power of the technology comes in. Because we built BioTree in a way that is inclusive, meaning that any team member or staff member can collect the data, that data then flows into a dashboard. And the dashboard allows these teams and the decision makers, the C-suite executives or the project managers or the general managers of a camp or a lodge, to have a centralized system where data from all of their operations filters through in real time. And the beauty of it is that everything is geotagged. The platform works fully offline. And so when this data comes in, it's obviously like in a news feed. Not obviously, it is in like a news feed. Yeah. There's also a beautiful geospatial map to visualize the data. And this gives us the ability as an organization, let's pretend I'm African bush camps, I can now see what's happening across all my 17 properties and all my camps and lodges to understand in real time, where's work happening, where's it not working, or where's it
where
not
it's
happening,
and
having the accountability on my team to know, are they doing their job when they're meant to be doing it? And so there's an element of HR that comes into play as well. And we really help our clients go through this process of change management and behavior change, because it is a new system. Yeah. It's like the first time you got on a bike as you were a child, I fell flat on my face and got a scar on my forehead.
Me too. Training wheels or no training wheels.
Yeah, and then eventually the training wheels came off.
Yes.
Then you start to roll the right direction.
And that's all about traction at the end of the day. And what does the future of Bay Tree look like? Any exciting partnerships or developments we should keep our eye on?
Yes. Well, Lou, the tourism and the foundation sector is very much a primary focus for us. And we've got some incredible partnerships developing within the travel sector. And some of these organizations, these partnerships are growing with regards to, there's an organization called Travelist, which is founded by Prince Harry, and they're doing some incredible work of helping tourism organizations understand the data hub ecosystem of what certifications they need, how they can do it. We've got a wonderful partnership also brewing with The Long Run. And The Long Run is established many, many years ago out of East Africa. But it's a wonderful framework that follows the four C's. It's a model they've designed: conservation, community, culture, and commerce. And within that, they've got a wonderful model where they help organizations in tourism track and measure what their impact is within the hospitality sector. And so partnerships are significant for us in terms of growing, sharing brand credibility and validation in the market. And so there's many others in that realm. But the future is really, focusing on the tech and the team. Yes. At the end of the day, we're a tech business. We're a startup. We've been going for 5 years. We've been in the market since 2020. And I just want to, number one, start about the team. Having a team within an organization that gels and works together and seamlessly understands each other's roles and responsibilities, plus buying into the mission and the vision and what Beatrice is all about, as the founder and CEO, that gives me immense pride and joy, because I absolutely love my team. Yeah. And I won't say we were a family, but we are a tribe. Yeah. A tribe that just understands, as you said at the beginning, it's a movement.
Yes.
And we all care about the same thing, and our hearts and our minds are dancing towards just creating positive outcomes for people and planet. And by having a good team, it establishes great technology. And so the technology side of it is, how do we ensure that we're not just building what we think is cool and fancy tech, but we're actually listening to our clients, what problems are they facing on the ground, and gathering the feedback that helps us understand, this is what our tech needs to do. We're not trying to be the Apple or the Microsoft. Yeah. We want to be integrated with our clients to actually build tech that is relevant and not cumbersome, not complicated, not expensive. And so in saying that, there's a lot of automation, a lot of that lovely word AI.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, no, it's thrown away around too loosely.
Yeah.
It's like a burger in Steers. Yeah. Everyone's chomping on a chip, and the chip disappears, and we don't really understand what's left. Something like that. And for us, it's more looking at it as a data system. How do you use a large language model?
Yeah.
Purely a system and a model, I'm not going to go too techie, that just allows me to ask a system, what is my data telling me? And the technology can help prompt and guide and provide recommendations based on that data within your platform, within the Beatrice ecosystem. Yeah.
And obviously there's a couple of boards that are starting up here as well. The Tourism Board, which I need to link you with Tom Foster. Mm-hmm. I will let you know when the next meeting is. Rotary, you always want to get into the Rotary with Rose White. But I do think it's important to locally hook up and for yourselves to integrate with what already is existing here, to offer an extension of what you can give them. It's coming towards the end of our interview. For those listening who want to make a difference in sustainability, whether in business or personally, what's one piece of advice, Dimitri, you'd like to share?
Lou, just to demystify sustainability, impact, conservation, one doesn't have to have studied these topics. One doesn't have to be an expert in these topics in order to get a foot in the door. We actually need more non-sustainability, non-conservation people to join these sectors, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're a marketer, whether you're working in a field that is totally separate to the world of conservation or social impact or sustainability. We need you. We need different ways of thinking. We need new minds to come into the space to change some of the dinosaur legacy mindsets that still exist in the conservation sector. And we need to upgrade them, because quite frankly, what we're doing isn't working. If the WWF is putting out a report to say that in 50 years, we've lost 74% of all monitored wildlife globally, nearly 3/4 of all wildlife we've shaved off in the planet. And so there is great work being done. But unfortunately, it's just not good enough. And we need more people to come into the space, to come challenge the sector, to come inspire and innovate in the space, in the sector. And we need to be more kind amongst each other.
Yeah.
Let go of ego.
Yeah.
And we need to be vulnerable to say, guys, I actually don't know what I'm doing and I need help. It's okay to ask for help. And we just need to be kind to each other to help accelerate the change that we're all dreaming of.
Because it is. We're all dreaming to live in one world and preserve as much as we can in where we are living. And to appreciate, really reappreciate our environments.
Yes.
And like you say, it doesn't. It takes one person to do one good action that can, from there, have a domino effect that can create so much more for our world.
100%.
But it's absolutely such a pleasure chatting to you, and it's always just so enlightening. And I thank you, Dimitri, so much for coming in. And I would love to have you come back in studio again. And,
thank you, Leah.
And I will be keeping you updated with all the new progressive conservation commitments that we have going forward, and invite you to be a part of those.
Thank you, Lou. And honestly, I'm so behind your mission and your vision of Hoedspruit FM, going deep into the conservation space, sharing these incredible stories of other conservationists doing amazing work. It really is inspiring to just be part of it.
Absolutely.
And so I really thank you for having me. Thank you for your time.